Boker Tov world. Wow, today's a very important day as we begin a brand new journey to a distant galaxy, a whole new kind of world. Masechet Gittin. So let's do a little bit of a introduction to Masechet Gittin and the daf that we're going to have today to get an overall look at some of the important halachas that are koveh legabe the get. A bad time for Gavi to be driving. Oh my gosh. So let's try to concentrate. So the Rambam opens up Hilchos Gittin with an actual analysis of the psukim that the Torah teaches us and the diuk in the words of the pasuk. And he's medayik 10 things that he says comes out in the end from the Gemara that are negea midiraisa, the definition of what is a kosher get. So I think it would be kedai for us to begin with the Rambam's analysis of the 10 things that are deraisa that we have to focus on and get, and then there'll be lots of other issues that we have to discuss. So let's take a look at the parasha. Ki kach ish isha uva'ala v'haya im lo timtza chen be'inav ki matza bar vatavar v'katav la sefer kritut v'natan biyada v'shilcha mi'beto. So on the surface, of course, it sounds like a rather simple story. And when we take a look at the actual words of the pasuk, we will see that each of these words is very important. Let's start with the V'haya im lo timtza chen be'inav. If he ends up not liking her, that's the first words. From that we learn one of the most important halachas, which is that there cannot be a get that is coming from any type of external pressure. It has to be out of his own determination that this is he wants to do. If for some reason he was pressured into it and it wasn't liritzono, it is not considered to be a kosher get. Now, later on, we're going to be questioning how it is then that a court could force a person to divorce and so on. But this is the poshita halacha. Now, let's take a look at the other simple idea. V'katavla sefer kritut. That implies that ein ha'isha mitgareshet ela b'sefer kritut. In other words, there is no way to achieve a divorce unless it is written down in a sefer. And we'll see what the implications of sefer mean. Furthermore, that means it has to be written. That's one thing is clear. Another thing that appears, and this is very central to the daf today, shiyehe haget nichtav l'shem. So it has to be v'katav la, it has to be katav l'shma. And since it says v'katav, it also has to be his. And that means that the writing of the get has to be, if somebody's going to go to a sofer to write the get, it has to be written with a kavana that this get means the dissolution of the marriage between this man and this woman, particularly. So you cannot write a generic get. And we'll talk about the different parts of the get, which are the toref and the tofes, which parts can actually be written generically, and which parts are considered to be the essence of the get, which have to be written lishma. That will be part of our analysis later on. Furthermore, since it says sefer kritut, and sefer has a double meaning, so it would mean, first of all, to understand kritut. And kritut means that it has to be a davar that is koreit beino levina. It has to completely cut off the relationship between the two of them. And that means, as we say in English, no strings attached. And that concept of no strings attached is actually fundamental to gittin. Any retention by the husband of a permanent right to anything at all in her life passes the get. Why? Because it's not kritut. It is not absolutely finito. That's not to say that there cannot be all types of conditions, as long as those conditions are not definitive of her life and they're going to expire at one point. And we'll talk about the details of that in the Gemara. And furthermore, that is part of the etzem get. It is a sefer kritut, which means that the writing includes the sefer, which has a double meaning. Sipur means it's telling you something. It's a narrative. And that means that the get has to include that concept. That is, that this is a cutoff between us. And therefore, it has to include such words as, Hareyat muteret l'chol adam. You can now get married to anybody. I don't limit you in any way. Our relationship is over, and I have no rights to say anything about that. That's all included in those words, Sefer Kritut. The fifth item is that there has to be a handing over of the get. This can be done by the person himself, or, of course, Shlucho Shel Adam Kamoto. But that's because it adds, V'katav Sefer Kritut, V'natan B'yada. He has to put it in, he has to give it to her. So first, V'natan. That means there needs to be a netina. That's the fifth issue. The sixth issue is that it has to be given to her. In other words, it's not just that I give the get, but it has to get into her hands, which means that it has to be literally, she has to be holding it, or it can be in an extension of her hand, which is, for instance, the shliach, sheladab kamota, or a chotzer, has the same din as being in her own hand, and so on. Precisely the limits to this are big discussions in the Masechet, obviously. Number seven, vishilcha mi beto. He sends her out of the house. Now, that doesn't mean that literally he has to send her out of the house physically. It means that the definition of the get is not that he is leaving her. So the English idea of I'm leaving you is not a get. And even if he would put that in writing and would include all of these other dinim, it is not vishilcha. It's not that he's leaving her. It's that she is being sent away from him. But if he talks about leaving her, that passels the get. So that's number seven. Eight is that because of the fact that it says, kimatsa ba, it says beferish at the end, he doesn't like her, kimatsa ba ervat davar. That word davar is very significant because we know that the Torah says, al pi shnayim edim yakum davar, which seems to imply that we absolutely will not have a kosher get unless we have al pi shnayim edim. Now, this raises big questions. Is the al pi shnayim edim, what edim are we talking about? The edim of the handing over of the get? Is the shnayim edim the signature on the get? This is a question that is called ede misira karte. Is handing over the get, is that what does the karet? Or is it ede chatima karte? And this is, again, an issue that we'll have with us, which, by the way, is also another important question because it raises the specter of the concept of lishma being the essential point. That is, if it's the ede chatima that create the kritut, then that's what has to be done lishma. But then perhaps the Iker Lishma is only that, and not in the actual ktivah, the shame of the man and the woman, and so on. So that is number eight, and that is because of the concept of davar, and as you can see, that's going to have great implications throughout the Masechet. Number nine, the continuum of v'katav la sefer kritut v'natan biyada. That continuum implies that if anything else needs to be done between the ketiva and the netina, that the get is posel. So, for instance, suppose a person writes a get on a tree, and then he cuts down the tree and gives the tree to the woman. Posel. Why? Because there needed to be something between the writing and the giving, namely the cutting down of the tree. Now, if there would be nothing in between, such as the giving of the tree, is now given as the karka and the tree is given to her, then there wouldn't be anything between. There's nothing wrong particularly with the tree. It's the fact that it would include a new item between v'katav and natan. That is number nine. And number 10 is the continuous sefer kritut v'natan biyada. And from there we learn what he gives into her hand has to be given as a sefer kritut. But if he says, "Here, darling, I bought you a new mezuzah as a gift for our bedroom. Take this." And it's actually a get, that is not considered to be a kosher get because of item number 10. Now, besides these 10 items that are midiraisa, we're going to see that there are many other issues that we need to think about that are drabonah. Now, surprisingly, the opening of the Masechet is focused specifically on the issue of lishma, as we're going to see. That becomes a very big item now. And Tosfos indeed wonders why that is the case and why are we specifically concerned out of all the 10 things for the issue of lishma. These are things that we'll be talking about as we go along today. I thought that we're in a new galaxy now without Kohanim that are doing all of this stuff. It's a new Masechet Barnea. Maybe you're not even known as Barnea in this neighborhood. It's a new galaxy, man. So let me just mention some of the issues. This opening issue is quite complex, even though it starts off looking very simple. And it turns out that it's extremely interwoven with many themes, and therefore it becomes a very rich and yummy sugya. So as I mentioned, one of the issues, of course, we're going to be talking about is the concept of lishma. The other issue that we're going to be talking about is the function of the edus and the question of the difference between the edei chatima and the edei mesira, which in our sugya also revolves around another question. That question is called irur. Irur means that there is a legal challenge brought to Beis Din about the get. Now, there could be a number of different types of legal challenges, because if a husband wants to challenge the get, the most obvious challenge would be to say the get is actually a false document that somebody wrote up, and it is mizuyaf. Mizuyaf means that it's a fake. I never wrote this get, I never ordered this get, and it's absolutely meaningless and valueless. So the question is, of course, what type of irur of ziyuf would be acceptable? But there are also more subtle types of ziyuf. Suppose the husband comes forward and says, "Oh my gosh, a terrible mistake was made, and I actually found this get in a garbage pail, and I thought I would save money by using it. It had my name and her name on it. I'm assuming that's because the Sofrim were practicing and they took our names at random," or actually one of those guys is a real bum, he hates my guts. So this was something like a voodoo doll where he was writing this get to practice, but it wasn't written Lishma for Gerushin and I never commissioned it. Well, that's a more subtle irur. What would be the situation if there's an irur? Which leads us to another very important idea, and that is the meaning of get. So a get is actually an overall word for contracts. And we've already seen that the Gemara uses the word get for gite momon as opposed to gite nashim. So there's nothing that is specifically oriented to divorce in get other than the fact that we have started using that word almost maybe 95% of the time for this sugya. And because of that, it's come to mean Gite Nashim as opposed to Gite Momon, and we need to specify. There's a very beautiful Gra who points out that there's a reason for this in terms of the Remez, and this is like a brilliant kind of Gra kind of thing. And he points out that nowhere in the entire Tanakh do the letters Gimel and Tet appear together. And therefore, if we want to talk about a Get Kritut that divides between people, the perfect word is Gimel Tet. Okay. So then we would know that we're talking about the type of contract that pushes away things that are together. This is so much an important remez that one of the reasons that is offered by Tosfos here for why it is that there's a minhag to have specifically 12 lines in a get is because 12 is the gematria of Gimel and Tav. Which is fascinating. Tosfos also brings another amazing remez to the 12, which you would think is off the wall until you become more familiar with the complexities of the issues in the Torah through the Masechet. And that is that since it's called Sefer Kritut, we want to include within it all of the spaces that are mafsik between each one of the Svarim of the Sefer Torah, of the Chumashim. So therefore, we have to have four lines between each Chumash, and that means that we need between the first five Chumashim, we're going to have these three, but not four, because we don't include Devarim. Why don't we include Devarim? So you'll use, of course, all kinds of remazim. Devarim, anyway, Tosis doesn't say this, but Devarim, anyway, is excluded, because Devarim doesn't begin with a Vav, like the other Chumashim are. And therefore, the lines are meant to push it apart. The very fact that it doesn't begin with a Vav means that it is, by definition, a separate idea, as Rabbeinu Bachya speaks out, and as you'll find in frameworks on Devarim in the introduction, and Ad Kedei Kach, this is significant, that we don't bother putting in those four lines into a get, which is there for separation. Anyway, that's all cute, but let's get back to the issues that we're going to be talking about. So we were talking about Ir-Ur. We're talking about the nature of a shtar. Now the question is the nature of a shtar sort of, by definition, something that you cannot be ma'ar'er on if it is signed? And this is called that Edim ha-chatumim b'shtar k'mi shenechkira edutan b'beit din. The meaning of a shtar is that if it is signed, then that means that the Edim are the equivalent of having gone through a cross interrogation in Beis Din, and there is no longer any possibility of Ir-Ur, no matter what it is that they're going to be saying. Now, in order to have Edim in a shtar, we cannot just have a signature, because how do we know that the signature itself is not falsified? Maybe it is mizuyaf. And that is called, as we've seen in many places, kiyum. A kiyum is not a dindafka in Gitei Nashim. All shtarot have this concept of kiyum, which in Dine Mominus we call all the time the henpek, which is the stamp of the bezdin that has examined either they have ascertained because they themselves are familiar with the signature, or because they have witnesses coming in to identify the handwriting, and that therefore this is the signature of the get. If we take those main ideas here, then taking two more issues into consideration, we will have a nice introduction of the issues for today. And that is igun. Now, we've already met the idea of igun in Yevamos, where we find that the Rabbanan made special dinim to make life livable, really, by not putting women into a position where they are stuck. And in a position where you will have a legal challenge to a get and no way to get out of that challenge or no easy way to get out of that challenge, we could end up with tragedies. And that would be the tragedy of igun. And therefore, there are special takonas here to avoid those problems. Furthermore, there's another concept which is called la'az. La'az means loshon hara. So that even where an ir-ur may be ineffective legally, it always gets people blabbing. And people blabbing is something that we want desperately to avoid when it comes to issues of whether this woman is legally divorced or not. That's all we need, is that there should be tainas that she's not really divorced, her children are mamzerim. You get this kind of thing all the time. And therefore, we also need to avoid the implications of an ir-ur habal, even if it wouldn't be accepted. Because if it even gets into court, even if we'll be doicha it, it raises the problem of laws. Taking all of this into consideration, let us begin with our wonderful new Masechet Gittin. Hamevi geit mimidinat hayam, tzarich shiomar b'fanai nechtav. Now, for some crazy reason, we have this new din d'rabbana. If you're bringing a get from Medinat Hayam, what does Medinat Hayam mean? So Rashi says Medinat Hayam, anything that is chutz l'aretz is called Medinat Hayam, except for Bavel. Now, that's all very nice to say at the end of the sugya. And Rashi often does that. But it is not the meaning in the Mishnah, as we shall see. Because initially, the understanding of the meaning of Medinat Hayam means far away somewhere across the sea. And the Ran even suggests that the reason that we speak specifically of Medinat Hayam, I mean, why do we talk about overseas as opposed to overland? Why mention the sea at all? So the Ran suggests that the very point of mentioning the sea is because since to the west of Eretz Yisrael, we do not have anything nearby. And therefore, to settle down in Cyprus, that's understandably far away. And because of that, we want to give over the sense of there not being anything nearby. And we're going to see that this is important in the understanding of the logic of the Mishnah and in the language of the Mishnah. So the concept of Medinat Hayam up front means a place far away, even overseas. So he has to say for some reason, if he is a shliach, and we'll see this is called the shliach loholacha, he's a shliach for carrying the get, bringing it to Beis Din, and there's also a shliach for giving a get, and there he would have to say still, b'fanai nechtam, b'fanai nechtam, as we'll see. Rabbi Gamliel Omer, it's not only far away overseas. This would be true even from a place nearby, like maybe Rechem or maybe Cheger. So these are places that are close to Eretz Yisrael. Now, Tosfos, we're going to be talking about Rechem and Cheger later. And the question is whether we are referring to the Rechem and Cheger that are actually Kadesh and Boret. And these are the Targumim, actually, of that. Are we talking about the words that are brought up in the cities in Bereishis, where Avram Avinu were? Or are we talking about someplace else? But the question over here is that we're dealing with a nearby town. You would still need to say, B'fanai nechtam, B'fanai nechtam. Therefore, says Rabbi Gamliel, now let's not jump to conclusions. Because you think the Medinat Hayam means far away, even Rechem and Cheger are included in the same statement. Rabbi Eliezer says, forget about Rechem and Cheger, even from Kfar Ludim to Lud. Now, the reason that Kfar Ludim and Lud are mentioned specifically is because, as we're going to see, it's a muvla'at. A muvla'at means it's surrounded totally by Eretz Yisrael, and over there, you'd be bringing from a town that is just outside of the legal boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. And these are the boundaries of the Biashnia that we're talking about, as we'll see, not of the Gvulais of Eretz Yisrael that are mentioned in the Torah. And so this town is surrounded on three sides by Eretz Yisrael, is so close to the city of Lud that it's called Kfar Ludim, because it's full of Luddites. All the people who don't want to use cell phones and everything, they all go to Kfar Ludim to get their kosher phones. There may be other reasons that it's called Kfar Ludim, because they're full of people from Lud. So you would say, okay, so there's always people from Lud in Kfar Ludim, which may change our understanding of the Mishnah, as we'll see. It sounds now to be a silly consideration.
Ludicrous.
But, sorry?
A ludicrous consideration.
All right, I have to give in to that one, although I wouldn't have given the time for it. V'chachamim omrim, v'chachamim say, no, there's something else that you're missing here. Now, the way that the chachamim is phrased is very disturbing. Eino tzarich shi'omar b'fanai nechtam, b'fanai nechtam. Nobody else needs to say it unless you're actually bringing from chutz la'aretz as medinat hayam, but they add something to what the Tanakhama says. So note what we've had. Tanakhama, Medinat Hayam, Rebbe Gamliel, even Rechem V'Cheger, Rebbe Eliezer, even Kfar Ludim Lelud, which is Muvlat, the Chachomim saying what appears to be repetitive. No. It's only Medinat Hayam. However, if you look carefully, what the Chachomim add over here is the word V'Hamolich. So people that are bringing a get from Medinat Hayam to Eretz Yisrael, but also in the inverse. If they're sending a get from Eretz Yisrael to Medinat Hayam, they also need to say, B'fanai nechtam, B'fanai nechtam, which may change our total understanding of the basis for the need of saying v'nai nechtav at all. So only ha-mevimin midinatayam v'ha-molich. What about another issue? What about somebody who brings from one medina to another medina in Midinat Hayam? Now, the meaning of medina is a political entity, and we have to consider why are political entities meaningful. That's also going to be an important consideration. What does politics have to do with the dinim of the get? But that is the actual meaning of medina. Tzorech shiomar b'fanai nechtav u'b'fanai nechtav, even if they're both in Midinat Hayam. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, forget about another political entity. Even mehegmonia lehegmonia, even if you're talking about an area that may not be a politically well-defined entity, but it's under the control of one tribal chief as opposed to another tribal chief, there's a local control that is also enough to be mechayev the din of b'fanai nechtav v'fanai nechtam. Now, what appears to be the continuation of the Gemara, of the Mishnah, is that we're going to define the Gvulais of Eretz Yisrael. And in fact, the Rambam actually utilizes the words of this Mishnah to talk about the Gvulais of Eretz Yisrael. Tosus, however, denies that this is about the Gvulais of Eretz Yisrael and explains that what we may be talking about over here are towns that are far away from the center of Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore may be less well-schooled in the dinim of Gittin. And we'll talk about that when we get into the Gemara of the difference of where you need to say b'fanai nechtav, b'fanai nechtam, and where you don't. But the process is, Reb Yehuda is coming along to explain that any place from Rechem East is called Medinat Hayam. And Rechem itself is also considered to be Midinat Hayam, which, of course, raises all kinds of problems in terms of other places where we find the towns that we're going to be talking about included in the Gvulais of Eretz Yisrael. I mean, when we say Ashkelon and south is called Chutz La'aretz, well, Ashkelon is certainly part of Eretz Yisrael. So again, you can say, well, Ashkelon wasn't conquered by the Olei Bavel. But may Akko litzafon? Akko and north is the border, and Akko is like the north. Whereas Rabbi Meir says, Akko is like Eretz Yisrael for Gittin. Now we know that they used to kiss the actual rocks, the stones of Akko, when they came in from Chutz La'aretz, and that was the entry into Eretz Yisrael. So again, the question is, are we talking about parts of Akko? And Akko is actually partially in Eretz Yisrael, partially in Chutz La'aretz, and we're giving a din about the entire Akko. All of this we will be discussing. Now, how about if you bring a get within Eretz Yisrael? Then, eino tzarich shomar b'fanai nechtav b'fanai nechtam. But the problem is, if you don't say b'fanai nechtav b'fanai nechtam, how will we, now the Mishnah is saying something that is a brand new idea that opens up our mind, because we never thought that saying b'fanai nechtav, b'fanai nechtam is related to the question of whether there are legal challenges brought to the get. But all of a sudden, the Mishnah says, well, if you don't say b'fanai nechtav, b'fanai nechtam, what can we do about a legal challenge to the get? Which implies that saying b'fanai nechtav, b'fanai nechtam may be A, in order to avoid legal challenges, or at least B, it makes it possible to deflect a legal challenge, which is all weird. How? Why? This is clearly a key to understanding the Mishnah. So it says, but what then would we do? Im yeshalav orerin, so if we have any challenges, yitkayim b'chotamav. So all we need to do is to be mekayim the signatures on the get. And once you have a legally signed get, then the court will not entertain motions of challenge. Okay, why would that be true? All of this is part of what we're going to have to understand today in figuring out what this halacha of b'fanai nechtav, b'fanai nechtam is all about. So, the obvious question is, huh? Where did this come from? My time. So the Gemara wants us to understand where this entire idea comes from. And of course, it's a strange way to begin the Masechet, because this is like this side issue, right? You know, if you're bringing a get from far away, you need to say, can't we find out what a get is first? And can't we find out what the dinim are that this is all going to be based on? But remember, this is always the derech of the construction of the Mishnah, in which we're allowed to penetrate slowly from the outside to the core. And by looking at the way that things have evolved, we end up figuring out what it was that lies at the bottom. And as I've pointed out many times, this is precisely the way that we proceed as human organisms in understanding the world around us. We take a look, and this is how science has proceeded. We take a look at these phenomena that we think are, whoa, this is like basic. Turns out it's not basic at all. It's an outgrowth of something else, which itself is an outgrowth of something else. And it takes you literally thousands of years to learn the early Mishnayos of nature, where you think you know everything. You know, as an infant, you already know not to get too close to the end of the bed because it hurts when you fall, and you now figure you know everything there is to know about gravity, and what else do I need to know? And so on and so forth. The more you penetrate, the more complex this seems to be, and ends up changing the entire vision that you have of what in the world is this universe anyway. And that's exactly what is done in Torah and Mishnah. So, there's two possibilities, okay? One, that we're going to remember this as the machlokas of Rabba and Rava. So Rava says, the problem is lefi she'ein b'ki'in lishma. People that don't live in Eretz Yisrael are ignorant, and they don't know about the fact that a get needs to be written lishma, and therefore we need to be sure that the katav la is indeed mikuyam, that it was v'katav la. Okay, Tosfos suggests maybe our special concern for the v'katav la is because people who are not familiar with the way that a drasha is made will not take seriously the fact that la means specifically lishma. All right, we'll see other answers to this problem. But in any event, we need to say b'fanai nechtav, b'fanai nechtav. Now, the obvious question is, if we're going to say b'fanai nechtav, b'fanai nechtav, and the entire issue is to make certain that it was written lishma, why don't we have the shliach saying b'fanai nechtav lishma? And b'fanai nechtav lishma. I mean, after all, isn't that the main point? And what is the difference between the nechtav and the nechtam? Are they both have to be lishma? Would it be kosher if only one or the other was done lishma? These are questions that are immediately raised by Rabba's approach. Rabba says, that's not the point at all. The point is that since ein edim mitzuyim l'kaimo, now this obviously is far more useful in introducing the question of political entities or hegemonia la hegemonia. Well, yes, says Rava, the point over here has nothing to do with what people know. It has to do with the problem of whether in the event that there's a challenge to the get, will I be able, I speaking as the woman, will I be able to confirm that this get is kosher by simply being mekayim the get with the edim? Now, that was the point at the end of the Mishnah, right? So it seems very clearly to imply that if you're in a place where there's constant availability of the witnesses, so fine, then I don't have a problem. Somebody who's going to bring me a get from New Zealand, how am I going to be able to be mekayim these signatures? That's a big problem. And therefore, since the Rabbanan did not want a woman to be in a position where there would be no way out of a legal challenge to her get, so therefore, there was a takana made that we need to do something that will be the equivalent of a kiyum up front. Now, how in the world is a shliach saying b'fanai nechtav, b'fanai nechtam, how is that the equivalent of a kiyum? That's not clear, and we're going to have to look into that tomorrow. But nonetheless, it seems obvious that that's what the Mishnah is concerned about. Ways to avoid Ir-Ur. So therefore, says Rava, look, if you could have witnesses that are Mitzriyim L'Kaimo, then we wouldn't have to worry about Ir-Ur, because you could always simply confirm the signatories, and then you've got a Kamisha Nechkar Edutan Bebeitin. This is a shtar that cannot be challenged. It's as simple as that, once we have a henpeck. But if you cannot find witnesses, you have to have some alternative to making certain that the woman is protected from Ir-Ur, from challenges that they get. And somehow or other, this is going to make the Ir-Ur untenable, which we'll have to figure out why. Now, anyway, tell me the immediate obvious differences between Rabba's approach, and again, Rabba is because Eina Bekiyim Lishma, and Rava's approach. So my binayu. Well, I can tell you right up front. First of all, ike binayu de'at yo betray. How about if two shlichim bring the get? And they come and they say, the husband appointed us, two of us, to bring this get. So then, according to Rabba, if the issue is lishma, the fact that there are two of them doesn't change a darn thing. I still need to know that the get was written lishma, don't I? Masha Inkin. According to Rava, where the problem is that I cannot be Mekayim the get in the event of an eventual challenge of an Ir-Ur, so then this would obviate that need. Why would it obviate that need? Well, Rashi says it would obviate that need because now we have two people. And if we have two people, then that means that they are always available to be Mekayim the get. So there's no need for us to make a takona for Eidim Lekaimo. Tosa says, what? First of all, what makes you think that these two witnesses recognize the signature at all? I don't understand why you're saying that. And secondly, does that mean that because they brought the get that they're planning on staying here forever to be available for Kiyum? They're taking the next flight out. So how in the world are they going to be there for Kiyum? They only came to deliver the get. Where would you get such nonsensical ideas from? Therefore, says Tosfos, the point of why it now obviates the need of the Eidim L'Kaimo is because if two Shlichim come along and say, the husband gave us this get and asked us to deliver it, then that is the equivalent of the husband delivering the get. In that case, where a husband delivers a get b'faneinu, there is never a din b'fanai nichtav v'fanai nichtam. We always understand that if he wrote a get, we have every right to assume that it's b'cheskas kashrus on the get, as we're going to see, and therefore he cannot come forward by challenging the get. And since we have here the equivalent of the husband delivering it, because we have two shlichim who are themselves Eidim about the fact that this husband gave it to us to deliver, there's no room for Ir-Ur, and therefore there will be no need for Kiyum. That's Tosis's approach to why, according to Rava, there is no requirement if you've got two witnesses. Now, there's another difference between them. How about if you're sending from one separate political entity within Eretz Yisrael to another political entity? If the problem is Eina Bekiyim Lishma, it's irrelevant. Political entities are irrelevant. If, however, so that would mean, according to Rabba, what do I got to talk about b'fanai nichtam? Anywhere in Eretz Yisrael, people are bekiyim in the fact that a get has to be written lishma. But according to Rava, that the problem is that we need to have witnesses available for kiyum. Well, if you're in another political entity where you're going to need a visa to get out and a visa to get in, and who knows if you're going to be allowed to travel, then we have Ein Eidim Mitzuyim L'Kaimo, even in Eretz Yisrael. So then that would mean that according to Rava, we've got the issue of b'fanai nechtam due to the lack of local witnesses, even within Eretz Yisrael. Or another difference. Suppose you're within the same political entity in Chutz La'aretz. So now you've got people around all the time. You could always be Mekayim it, but what good is a Kiyum if you don't know that it was written Lishma? So therefore, would mean, according to Rava, if I have witnesses, because we're in the same country, we all live in New Zealand, everything is fine. But according to Rava, well, people in New Zealand don't know about the Shema. In which case, you would have to say b'fanai nechtam, b'fanai nechtam, even within the same area in Chutz La'aretz. Now, let me just ask you something. I don't get it. If Rava is seriously concerned about the fact that we don't know that it's a kosher get, because maybe it was not written lishma. So the Amar lefi she'ein biki'in lishma. So what good is the one person who is the shliach coming along and claiming that this is written? I mean, besides the question that he never even said it's written lishma. But wouldn't we need two witnesses? Liboy trei. Midi dahavi akol idiot shabat Torah. I mean, edus in the Torah requires two witnesses. And now you're telling me that if we are seriously doubtful about the kashrus of the get, and we're going to accept the word of this one shliach, how does one shliach help us in any way? I mean, it's totally useless, isn't it? No, actually, Eid Echad Ne'eman B'Yisurin. Look, a woman who says, I went to the mikveh, is she believed by her husband that she's Tahora? Yes. How can you believe her? You need two witnesses, don't you? So apparently, one witness is sufficient to establish that you can be samech that something is mutter. The Torah says about a nida, v'safra la, about a zava, she should count the sivanikim for herself. What do you mean for herself? How can I trust her? Where's the witnesses? Apparently we rely on that. If somebody tells you the food I'm feeding you is kosher, are you allowed to eat that food? Or does he have to bring two witnesses that attest to the fact that the shechita was kosher and so on and so forth? I don't know. People eat over other people's homes all the time. Where's the two witnesses? So obviously when it comes to questions of the issue of Isser, we believe a person who says that something is kosher, it's kosher. The same thing is true over here. We believe this shliach, that this is a kosher get, right? No, says the Gemara, not right. Of course it's not right. Emer damrinan eid echad ne'eman b'yisurin. The only time we believe a single witness is where we have a question of, let's say, a chaticha, we have a piece of meat. Now, it's a suffix of this piece of meat is chelev, suffix of this piece of meat is shuman. Over there, we don't have a cheskas iser. Here, we have a cheskas iser of eshes ish. And therefore, in order to cancel a cheskas iser, you need to have two witnesses. We only allow one witness when there is no cheskas iser. Now, this is a little bit nutty. Didn't we just say that we brought the raya from Anita? Wasn't Anita becheskas iser? Didn't we say that we just brought a raya from the fact that people can eat food in another person's house? Well, I mean, wasn't this animal becheskas iser? I mean, it was before it was shechted, you know, it was Avri Menachai, and then it was Osir as Eina Zavucha. I mean, how did we come to be matirid on the basis of one aid, and now you're telling me, no, but you can't do that if there's becheskas iser. All of the basis of believing one aid is becheskas iser. So basically, when we talk about becheskas iser, what we mean is a cheskas iser that is not in your hands to deal with. Something that is biyodcha to deal with is not called becheskas iser. Since she can go to the mikveh, you could do the shechita, you can take out the chelev, etc., etc. This particular piece doesn't have a cheskas of gidan nosha in it, and so on and so forth. So all of these issues need to be clearly understood by the particular case. It's not for us here to go into the question of what's called this chazik isura, but in any event, we're looking at this as being a cheskas iser eshes ish. And therefore, you would need two witnesses. Many Rishonim have the word vav vihave, not just have, because the issue of its being a dover shebe'erva is irrelevant. If any time that you have a cheskas iser, you need two witnesses. And therefore, many Rishonim learn that this is a separate problem. not to mention the fact, v'havidover sheb'erva, since you're coming along to be matir an erva, this woman was an eshes ish, and now you're coming to take off the iser eshes ish, ein davar sheb'erva pachot mishnayim, because we learn out davar tavar, right? Al pishnayim edim yakum davar. So this specific case would for sure require two witnesses. Of course, this raises a fascinating question. Are witnesses on a get directly dealing with the Dover Sheba Erva? Or are they simply being Mikayim, the technical way that the Torah allows you to dissolve the Dover Sheba Erva, but they're not telling you directly the status of the Erva? This is a fascinating discussion among the Achronim of how exactly the Edus on the Get is directly a Dover Sheba Erva, which we'll be getting into in other places in the Masechet. And so in this case, how in the world would we believe one shliach? Answers the Gemara, an amazing yesod about our Mishnah. Namely, Rov Bikiyinin, we really do not have any derisive basis for needing a kiyum of lishma. Why? Because if you have what appears to be a kosher get, written by a kosher sofer, like anything else in the Torah, you can rely on rov. And therefore, since 99% of the time, the get that is being brought before you was written by a professional, and the people that are involved in Gittin, everybody knows about how to write a get lishma. Even according to Rabbi Meir, who, remember, Rabbi Meir's shita is you always need to worry about the miut. We had this in Yevamos, because the question is, can a child male be miyabim, a child female? Because what do you care if you're going to say, okay, but you can't be Mekayim the mitzvah now. Fine, but they'll grow up together. Why shouldn't we just let them be married now at the age of 10? Why do we need to wait until they're gedolim? And everybody except Rabbi Meir says, of course, you could. But Rabbi Meir says, well, how do you know that this child is going to be fertile? And how do you know that this female is not an islandess? In which case they would be nochi of Yibon. And then you're giving an iser erva to these children to sleep with. So, I mean, what percentage of people turn out to be islandess? What percentage of males turn out to be Sirisim? Rabbi Meir is Chayesh Lemiyuta. But in this case, even Rabbi Meir wouldn't worry about it. Why? Because there is not just the question of whether most people know about Lishma. There's the question of within the small group of people that write Gittin, which are Safrei de Dayane, you have almost a complete knowledge of Lishma. And therefore, as Tosis explains it, Aliba de Rabbi Meir, we have a miuta de miuta. And Rabbi Meir is made that a miut of a miut is considered to be, for sure, we go according to the Rov. So it would be a very, very small proportion, even of the small number of people and the proportion of people who don't know Lishma. If they are Dayanim, the Sofrei Dayanim, it's almost impossible to find one. So that's Stam Safri de Dayane Migmar Gemirit. Therefore, Mi Ikra Din, we are dealing with a contract that is on its surface, is a kosher contract. We have no reason to worry about Lishma at all, Midiraisa. It's the Rabbanan who created the problem. So they were worried about what? Well, Rashi says they were worried about not Sofrei de Dayane. Namely, suppose a guy finds a get in a garbage pail. And he says, oh my God, this is a message from above. Here I have this divorce in a garbage can. It's got my name and her name on it. I've been wondering whether we ought to get divorced. God is great. Allah Akbar. So he's going to take this divorce and he's going to present it to his wife. So then we have to worry about Lishma because it's not coming from the Sofrei de Dayane. It's coming from Sofrei de Dayane who are only practicing and they never meant for this to be a kosher get. And therefore, that's what we're worried about. This is Rashi's pshat. Tosfos does not like this pshat. And the reason he doesn't like this pshat is because if you live in an area where you could find your name in the garbage pail, it would be in an area where maybe somebody else ordered this get, and he has the same name as you, and he's got a wife with the same name as your wife, and therefore your chayesh, he maybe got the get, and maybe he threw it out. But then the get would be puzzled anyway, because you're not allowed to write a get like that in a town with two people with the same name. So how could that be the problem? Therefore, Tosfos introduces the issue of Ir'ur as the fundamental concern of the Rabbanan in the first place, even according to Rabbah, who says that the issue is Lishma. And therefore Tosfos says, or this is the Ri at least, that the reason the Rabbanan insisted that we need to worry about Lishma is in order to avoid the type of challenge to a get where a husband would come along and he would say, this is not a kosher get because it wasn't written Lishma, which normally we would throw out because we would say, what are you talking about, man? So for the Dayanim know about Lishma. Ah, says the husband. Yes, but they only wrote the get for practice. I was the one who took the get and I had witnesses sign on it. So that was the problem of Lishma. And there he would create an Ir'ur, which, according to Tosfos, is problematic, not because necessarily it would be believed, but because of the fact that it would lead to la'az, it would lead to lashon hara about this woman and her family. So this, as you can see, is beginning to get a bit complicated. So it's because of that issue that the Rabbanan made the din of l'fanai nechta v'fanai nechta, both according to Rav and Rav, means we're taking into consideration the avoidance of Ir'urim in different ways. And why do we believe just one witness? Mishum iguna, akilu barabbanan. Here's the other factor. The Rabbanan didn't want to make it hard for a woman to be able to escape a nira rabbal. So they said, all the shliach needs to say is b'fanai nechta b'fanai nechta. What? They're making life harder on the woman. That's not making life easier. Because if they only have one witness, which is the shliach, so then the woman could get into trouble, no? I mean, it's not a kula, it's a chumra. If they would have said you need two shlichim or two witnesses, fine. Then the Baal could never even try to be ma'arer. Lo'ati Baal ma'arer, and that's what we want, to keep him out of this. But if they only say chad, the husband will come along and say, well, you know, you only have one witness. This is an issue we'll have to look at tomorrow. But you can see now the rich complexity of elements that are taken into consideration in this idea. So we're worrying, just to sum up, we're worrying about the din of Lishma because of the fact that it is open, according to Tosfos, to Ir'ur, or because, according to Rashi, it is something that might actually happen if a person finds a get. We're worried about the need for kiyum, and therefore the access to witnesses, which according to Rashi means if you have two shlichim, you're not worried because they could be witnesses. Or according to Tosfos means if you have two shlichim, you don't need the witnesses because you have a kosher shtar, since it was as if the husband delivered it directly, because we have two witnesses saying the husband made this my delivery. We're worried about the access to the knowledge of Lishma. We're worried about Rov. We're worried about the question of Bikiyut among the Rov, the Sheet of Chashin and Lemi'uta, and the question of Kiyum of a Shtar based on outside witnesses or based on the identification of the court itself. This is the first layer of our fascinating foray into the issues of what appears to be a minor gezeirah about how to deliver a get. To further increase your riches, don't forget to tune in tomorrow at the same channel, same time, for our next exciting adventure of the Masechet Gittin. Befanai Nechtav, Ubefanai Nechtam. See you all with the grace of HaKadosh Baruch Hu tomorrow. Kol Tov, everybody. Chazer this well, so that it becomes second nature to me now, like breathing out and breathing in. What does Rabbah hold, and what does Rava say? That way you won't get confused as we go along our way. It's second nature to me now. See you.